The Farringdon Advertiser. Reading. From Wild Canada to Major. Officer's career marked. Remarkable trial at Reading. The Major's version. On Friday, Major went into the box and gave the history of his career. He was born in Canada in 1888, and after leaving school, he travelled a great deal on business, being in the employ of one of the three firms which controlled the timber trade of America. Afterwards, he became bush foreman and had the supervision of 12 camps. They slept practically in the open. The camps consisted of sheds built by the men after cutting the wood. There were two bunkhouses in which to sleep, a blacksmith shop and a stable. He lived just as one of the men. The life was very rough, but very healthy. They breakfasted at 4 and worked up till 4 or 5 in the afternoon. He lived this life for 8 or 9 years. He was in the far northwest of the country when the papers announcing the war reached the camp, but that was several months after it had started. Recruits for the Flying Corps were asked for, and he went to Toronto and enlisted. Gazetted a second lieutenant, he came to England, arriving on New Year's Day 1916. He was posted to a school of instruction at Reading and was at Wantage Hall. He remained at Reading until the latter part of April, and on leaving for Norwich was presented by the non-commissioned officer instructors with a luminous watch as a mark of esteem. Whilst flying at Sedgwood in Norfolk, he had a crash, as a result of which he lost the sight of his left eye and was prohibited from flying again. He was made equipment officer, gazetted captain, and a fortnight later was promoted major. In November, he was made second in command at the camp at Milton. He reorganised the depot, introduced drastic changes whereby the output was considerably increased, and was mentioned in dispatches on the last day of the police court proceedings at Abingdon. He gave a categorical and emphatic denial of the charges, explaining the reason for giving hospitality to the lads, and said that in one case he invited the boy, who was interested in machines, to his house to show him some photographs of aircraft. And in another, he extended an invitation because the lad was seeking a commission, and he, Major, had to report upon his suitability. As a fact, he reported against the lad being given a commission. Other witnesses were called in support of defendant's case, amongst them Captain Sedgwick, a clergyman who spoke of defendant as being very straight and upright, but a very extraordinary man, which accounted for some of his actions in this case. Sir Ernest Wilde, in a telling address, said that whilst there was nothing the Major had to be ashamed of, he now realised the awful ordeal through which he had passed, that according to the English code, he might have made a mistake. Anyone was liable to have these foul charges made against them. It was no good asking what motive prompted accusations of this kind. The fact remained that in the case of women, many false charges had been made. How many cases had come into the courts in which no motive could be assigned? The question for the jury was whether the charge was true. Owing to the circumstances of this great war, we had had to readjust our views of one another. We now held different opinions as to what was conventional and what was unconventional. If a man was a true man, that was all that was required of him, and the Major's whole character now cried out against anything that was foul or bestial. Mr. Batchel, in replying for the Crown, commented upon the absence of motive to account for this charge being trumped. The defence had failed to suggest a possible motive. Reliance was placed on the eloquent address of counsel to induce the counsel to say that these youths were filthy liars. In summing up, Mr. Justice Lawrence remarked that although the practices and conventions of Canada, as indicated by Sir Ernest Wilde, were in all probability true, the real facts of the case remained unaltered, and Canadian ways could not be taken into consideration. He advised the jury that it would be unsafe to find a verdict of guilty on the major counts of the indictment. After deliberating in private for about 15 minutes, the jury returned a verdict of not guilty on the first two charges and guilty of gross indecency. His Lordship, in passing sentence, said the verdict returned by the jury was the only one under the full circumstances of the case which, in his opinion, was possible, and he directed accused to be imprisoned with hard labour for 12 months on each of the five counts, the sentences to run concurrently. It is understood that an appeal will be entered. 29th June 1918.